Shalom la Yehudim, Shalom la Bnei Noach, Shalom la Goyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Vav, B'Nisan, Tavshin Ayin Hei, Parashas Tazria, Metzora, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 14 April, 2015. Webcasting from Island Israel. Island Israel, isolated in the world, which is kind of a redundancy. Isolated comes from the Latin insula, meaning island. What would the Muslim secret agent at the helm in the White House, he is succeeding in fundamentally changing the United States, which means it no longer protects Israel from so many peoples who want to destroy the Jews who have brought the Promised Land back to life. The Iranians at the highest levels know no shame for talking like Nazis. At the same time, they deny the Nazis ever perpetrated the Holocaust. They deny the Holocaust and openly desire to ignite one. These Iranian Muslim priests, with their palsied, twisted minds, operate on such a primitive level. In their fantasy life, Israel is a satanic community. The old Jews as bloodthirsty vampires, gambit, you know, with the fangs for teeth and the talons instead of hands dripping with blood. And now we hear Putin in Russia has decided to sell Iran. After a five-year delay, Russia's S-300 air defense system, which is reported to be far superior to the current equipment they have. The sale will enable Iran to defend its nuclear works better if Israel tries to destroy them, and this will make it harder to do that. If I were a prime minister of Israel, though, I would not order such an attack. I think it is irrational. All agree that a successful strike would only mean delaying the program a few years. Well, Obama's plan, that he himself admits, is also only to delay for a few years. What's the difference? No, I think such an attack would be pointless. And in any case, in this age of foolishness, stupidity, and decadence, people seem to have forgotten that the enemy is not this equipment. Centrifuges are not the enemy. The enemy is not a machine, but the leaders of that country. Israelis also seem to think that if Israel just attacks the nuclear works, then that would be okay and the Iranians would respond proportionately. No, one must see that an attack on Iran's nuclear installations is an attack on Iran as a whole. It's an act of war. And in war, one wants to defeat utterly the enemy. What I would order up is no strike on the nuclear installations. I would not go near them. They are so well defended. Instead, I would wait for the government and the parliament to convene. And when they're all there, maybe on the most important day in their calendar, you strike there. You bomb the parliament when it's full in an effort to decapitate the government of Iran. Kill all of its leaders, which would also open the door to anti-Islamist Iranians to take power and free that country from the grip of these maniacal Muslim priests. Only then, after destroying the current regime by flattening the Majlis, the parliament, like Samson who brought down the roof on all the Philistines, when all the important ones are there inside, Israel then only should turn its attention to the nuclear installations. In other words, an Israeli attack against Iran's nuclear facilities is an attack against Iran as a whole, and better to strike at the head of the snake and kill the enemy in one fell swoop. Look at what King David did when he, as a teenager, faced off against the giant Philistine, wielding a huge sword. David had been offered armor and a sword, but there would be no contest were he foolishly to think of dueling sword to sword with that beast on 2 feet. No, David used his head. He was not going to engage in combat with Goliath. He intuitively understood what classical karate masters teach. You're not there to duke it out with your assailant. You're not there to hurt him. You're not there to wear him down, tire him out. You're there to kill him with one blow. Israel must accept it is at war with Iran. Denying this reality cannot be beneficial. And in this war, it will be a zero-sum game. Which, by the way, is how they score classical karate competitions. It's 1-0, which means the fight is over. One has delivered a killing blow. If the blow had landed in a real situation, that is, in competition, the fighters must target their rival just short of contact. And the blows must come up short and not make contact. Judges decide that if it had been a real blow, his opponent would die. Score one for one, and the game is over. Sort of like cybernetics, you know, the lubricant of our lives. It's all zeros and ones. And with Iran, there cannot be a prolonged encounter, given the size of the missile arsenal in Iranian hands. Israel Hayom reported today in a side item, small, that officials in Jerusalem report on major new arms shipments to Hezbollah from Iran. Their agents as well have been operating in Gaza, backing Hamas. The word is that Iran is threatening us, as it has not done so before. As Iran has been an active participant in Syria and in Iraq, Lebanon and Yemen, that's now four capitals under its thumb, so Iran is turning up the heat on us, trying to establish themselves in the north and the south, trying to smuggle arms to the Arabs in Judea and Samaria. We are at war with Iran, and that is a situation far broader than centrifuges and clandestine heavy water plants. The problem is not the hardware, the machinery. The problem is the men in robes who are in charge. What Israel might do as an alternative tactic would be to launch hundreds of lethal drones armed with missiles capable of flying above city streets and dropping down to hover outside the bedroom windows of high-rise apartment houses. Each one of these drones equipped with a missile big enough to explode just the apartment or the room on the other side of the window. And you will go after the 10 top guys in the country, you know their addresses, and at 3 a.m. some morning you launch all these drones and kill them that way. Analysts here today were not very good, I'm afraid, at explaining Putin's move, other than to place it in the context of the farce that the Lausanne talks have become. It's no secret that the major corporations in all P5 plus one countries are like racehorses chomping at the bit in the starting gate, raring to go and do business in Iran. And so Russia needs the money, and why not be the first kid on the block, basically, to tear up the P5 plus one sanctions? Make some money. What seems to be in progress is this generation's acting out its primal anti-Jew feelings, in this case, betraying Israel. Throwing Israel to the wolves, throwing Israel under the bus, God forbid. What's central to Christianity, the figure of Judas, with the most Jewish name, being the principal betrayer of the carpenter preacher from Nazareth, the Jew as a traitor, as sellout, only here are the Goyim betraying us for billions of dollars and euros in business. It's like the central Christian image of the crucifix, not just the plain cross, but with the tortured naked body of a Jew on display. I once watched on television Christmas Eve, midnight mass from St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City, and there was the Pope in his magnificent robes leading a procession behind his own outstretched hand leaning on a shepherd's staff topped by a crucifix. Holding it out there like that, the Pope seemed to be showing the crucifix to the world and saying, this is what we are about. We stand and march behind the image of a Jew being crucified for his religious beliefs. And no doubt, down the centuries of time, the Catholic Church has crucified, if not crucified really, then burnt to death, broke Jewish backs on the wheel, poured gold molten lead into their mouths. Thousands of Jews went that way. The processional seemed to be saying, this is what we are about. Torturing Jews to death for their religious beliefs. Israel is in a fight to the death with Iran, and it's in a match you don't win on points, but by delivering a killing blow. The U.S. also should know that it is at war with Iran and has been since 1979. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal this week that the U.S. is interested in the situation in Yemen, that is off the coast of Yemen. The USS Navy ship Sterrett was reported to have boarded a Panamanian flag freighter suspected of carrying weapons from Iran to the Houthi rebels, who are the Zaydi Shiites. And read that and thought the West truly has forgotten the age of the Barbary pirates, really 1,000 years of criminal aggression by Islam. Today's USS Sterrett bears the name of Andrew Sterrett, who, though from a wealthy family, joined the infant U.S. Navy as soon as it was born in 1794 in response to Muslim aggression. He first saw action in the Navy against the French in the late 1790s in the so-called quasi-war with France in the Caribbean in the age of Napoleon. Sterrett was promoted to be a captain of a ship for his good service, and when in 1801 Thomas Jefferson became president, one of his first acts was dispatching a squadron of 4 U.S. Navy warships to the Mediterranean, because Tripoli was threatening war. Namely, it was threatening to start hijacking U.S. merchant ships and enslaving the passengers and crews until ransomed. The 4 ships were the President, the USS Philadelphia, the USS Essex, and the USS Enterprise, the first ever American ship with that name. This was long before Star Trek. Lieutenant Andrew Sterrett was in command. In the course of the coming war, Sterrett would lead his men in sea battles with Tripolitans, in which his bravery and leadership earned him great renown. And there today, over 2 centuries later, is the USS Sterrett intercepting Muslim arms shipments in the Middle East.
Lecha Eli Teshukati בכך אשקי ואהבתי לך ליבי וחיליותיי לך רוחי ונשמתי חזק בך אדבק עד אישובי לאדמתי השיבני ואשובה נרצית תשוב אותי צאת תשובתי.
Yes, Needy, Barack Hussein Obama came into office wanting to fundamentally change this country, he said, clearly in its relationship to the state of Israel as well. Traditional policy would be and has been trashed. Obama's policy is fundamentally new for the U.S., this sellout of the Jews, this playing Judas to the Jews. And one piece of evidence, I think, for that was the report in the Washington Post today about two separate sessions yesterday in the White House between Obama and two separate groups of so-called Jewish leaders who haven't got the testicular fortitude to say no when invited to the White House. It's such a thrill for them to be invited into the Oval Office to meet the President of the United States of America, and many, one assumes, not for the first time. Obama seems to have been in a familiar mode of telling a story that is not true. In one session, he met with the millionaire businessmen in the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, and in the other, apparently, backers of Jewish extraction, like Chaim Saban. He was reported by one attendee to have been, quote, heartfelt about his connection to Israel. Another said the president talked about how deeply he feels about Israel and the Jewish people and anti-Semitism. It was not just about Iran. It was much, much deeper in terms of the president sharing with us how he felt, close quote. Get out your handkerchiefs. It seems to have been a fine performance by this chronic liar, this master thespian who puts on an act, tells his audience what they want to hear, and then leaves them with no respect for his own words in the future. It sounds as if he told these Americans of Jewish extraction, who commonly do not live Jewish lives, that is, they don't observe the Sabbath and the dietary laws. It sounds as if he told these assimilated Jews what they like to hear about anti-Semitism and threats to them as Americans. Not Jews. I once went for an interview for a job with the ADL, during the course of which I came to understand that the ADL is not a Jewish organization, but an American civil liberties organization for people of Jewish extraction, which is a very different thing for people who don't want the factor of their Jewishness to impinge upon their lives as Americans. So Obama knew to address issues important to such people, apart from the looming menace of a nuclear Iran, which he is helping to create. Again, this radical chasm opened up between Obama's words and his behavior, which is leading to the opposite of his words. You know, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, and he says he cares about Israel and will not let Iran have atomic weapons. He's lying there, too. Last webcast observed was this chronic behavior of Obama telling stories that are untrue, and yesterday's performances seem to have been executed by him as he always does. He is a practiced liar. And there is video of him in 2008 during the first campaign being interviewed, I think, on 60 Minutes and denying flat out he ever in church heard the words reported to have come from the mouth of his mentor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Sat in that church for 20 years and never heard the terrible, hateful things Wright is known to preach. Obama's performance yesterday was part of his effort to stymie the vote scheduled for today in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on a law to shackle this man's power to deal with Iran. Of course, he doesn't want that vote to pass. Shame on these Jewish backers of his, and the non-Jewish Jews in the president's conference as well. By attending, they pay their respects to this man whose hostility to the miracle of Israel reborn is out there for all to see. He has proven himself to be many times a liar who will say anything to defend himself and keep moving forward toward his goal, which in this case is Iran in possession of atomic bombs, that they can use to terrify Israelis and keep investors and tourists away. I think it was about 10 years ago, a public opinion poll here asked the question, what will you do if Iran gets the A-bomb? And some 25% said, we leave the country. Iran sees in the U.S. and Israel the big Satan and the little Satan, with Obama saying to Iran, at your service.
בוחן כליות ולב גלוי וידוע לפניך שאני רוצה לעבוד אותך בוחן כליות ולב גלוי וידוע לפניך שאני רוצה לעבוד אותך אני עבד לעם קדוש על אדמת הקודש אני מחויבת לפעול עמך כל תפילותיי, כל דימותיי נטפו על זה הסלע לגאולת עמך, בניך ונחלתך ונחלתך בוחן כליות ולב גלוי וידוע לפניך שאני רוצה לעבוד אותך בוחן כליות ולב גלוי וידוע לפניך שאני רוצה לעבוד אותך אני עבד לעם קדוש על אדמת הקודש אני מחויבת לפעול עמך כל תפילותיי, כל דימותיי נטפו על זה הסלע לגאולת עמך, בניך ונחלתך כליות ולב גלוי וידוע לפניך שאני רוצה לעבוד אותך
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. On the home front, Israel Hayom newspaper reported 2 days ago there was mob action on Shabbos, which in modern Israeli Hebrew in the MSM is not called Shabbos, it's called Sof Shavua, the weekend. And it was on the Jerusalem-Hebron road at Beit Umar, one of the two Arab settlements travelers between the two cities must pass through. One of the mobsters throwing projectiles at Israeli soldiers died, a 30-year-old father of two, and when news of his death spread, there was further action in Hebron and in Kalkilia and in Sinjil, Bilin, Na'alin. The word spread, and there were inciters in each locale primed to incite people in those places. The newspaper cited some who see an escalation in the rock-throwing mobs like this, which are commonly explained by the Arab sources in the MSM, as stemming from paralysis in the peace process, but I disagree. These thugs spend no time thinking of how to create for themselves a Palestinian state. They're just Arab teenagers. This is the Arab street, where everywhere in Araby there are swarms of idle, unemployed, semi-literate youth who in cycles rise up every so often and turn into rock-throwing mobs, throwing things at Jews. For sure there can be no placating such people. The propaganda, the allegedly moderate PA turns out on PA TV and PA radio and in PA publications, teaches these men again and again that all of modern-day Israel is rightfully their property. Haifa, Jaffa, Tzfat, it's all Palestine. And all theirs as of right, which the Jews stole from them. And it's a pity that Israelis have yet to face up to this truth about the Arabs here. They simply have never been interested, these people, in building an independent state for Palestinians. They're motivated by the chronic Arab hunger for other people's property, and they justify their hunger by their religion. Thanks to their Hamitic and Ishmaelitic inheritance, they're driven by feelings not of guilt but shame at the loss to the Jews in the battle for this land, and no amount of land handed over to them will satisfy their sense of grievance short of 100%. In their culture, they're always the victims of other people's aggression. Their own aggression is just self-defense. In this reality, I cannot think of any alternative to the current situation in which periodically our soldiers and police must face off against these wild asses of the seed of Ishmael who pelt them with rocks and then rage when their targets shoot back and kill one of them. Their indignation and sense of injustice knows no bounds when the Jews hit back. These are our neighbors for the foreseeable future, and I guess we just have to be reconciled to that. I mean, one reason Bibi won the election as he did is the reality that last summer, hundreds of thousands of Jews were forced during those 50 days to run in fear for their lives for shelter. And it's hard to imagine any one of these hundreds of thousands today thinking it would be a good idea to turn over Judea and Samaria, as Gaza was turned over, in the hope it would bank the fires of hatred on the other side and usher in an age of friendly relations. Only among the true fanatics of the left in Israel is the idea of the two-state solution still alive. Who in his right mind thinks it would be a good idea to turn the high ground of Judea and Samaria overlooking the coastal plain to the Arabs? It would be a good idea to return to the 1949 ceasefire line. That is the meaning of the two-state solution, after all. That is what the world of anti-Jewry has in mind. The evacuation of all Jews from the hills of Judea and Samaria and the rise of the state of Palestine with the BA in control. It would not hurt for the government of Israel, for the prime minister, to drop the pose of being ready for the two-state solution. When the Palestinians are ready, when they reform their views and change their behavior from hostile to cooperative. That was Bibi at Bar-Ilan in 2009 and remains his pitch. He supports the two-state solution under certain conditions, but of course, those are not in the cards for today and likely never will be, leastwise until Islam experiences a reformation and an enlightenment, neither of which is on the horizon. Thank you. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday evening, and I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.